Major Nelson, this is show number 251 for Sunday, November 11th, 2007. I'm here with E.
Hello.
And this show is the fifth anniversary show, E.
But not the fifth anniversary of the Major Nelson podcast.
No, this is the fifth anniversary of Xbox Live.
Wow.
It's been 5 years, and we're going to talk to you about that later on in the show, because we got a pretty big show. It's the fifth anniversary of Xbox Live. I was up at BioWare in Edmonton, Canada this week, where I got a bunch of interviews with everyone up there. And not everyone, but a bunch of folks.
Frostbite?
I did not get Frostbite, but there's a video up on Xbox.com where I think the video monkey who shoots video for me was doing all these outtakes. As I'm standing out inside, I'm free. I'm like, it's cold! And I'm swearing up a storm. Because it was really cold. And I realized how much of a wimp I've become since I've moved to the West Coast.
Become?
In terms of temperature.
You weren't always like this.
No, I mean, out on the East Coast, when we had, hurricanes and snowstorms and blizzards, I'm like, all right, whatever, I would deal with it. And now it's like, oh, temperature drops below 30, and I'm wimping out.
Yeah. We have rain, though.
Yeah, we have a lot of it. So this show, as I said earlier, I've got 1, 2, 3, 4 interviews with some of the folks who worked on Mass Effect. I've got the art director, the lead writer.
Oh, nice.
For Mass Effect. He also worked on the Coder series.
Okay.
I have Casey Hudson, who was in charge of the entire project, and then I have their community manager, Jay. So we'll be hearing from those guys later on.
Very cool.
So I was up there. You want to kick off? Because that's where I was last week. I'll talk about my travels last week. Do you want to talk about that?
Well, I wasn't there, so I can't really
talk
about it, can I?
Monday I went to Edmonton with Video Monkey, which is about an hour and a half flight from here.
That's it?
Yeah, it's only about an hour and a half. We're in one of those tiny little jets. We, none of my stuff would fit in the overhead. The overheads were really small.
Right.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, those little, tiny ones. Bombardier or something.
So we get to Edmonton, get our stuff, go over to the hotel, which is basically connected to where the BioWare offices is, and we went downstairs. And
Wait. There's a hotel connected to their offices?
Yeah, in the office park. They're in this office park, and there's a hotel all connected.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
So we go downstairs. We get there about 2 o'clock, and they had just finished. It was a community day, so they invited all these community folks up. Who was up there? Jake and Bear was up there. T-Bird, some of the MVPs.
Cool.
Knuckles Dawson was up there.
Okay.
Of course, he lives in Canada, so he has to go.
It's convenient. Yeah.
Right, it's convenient for him.
Well, so's Jaken.
Yeah, that's right. So, and all of them were actually. So's T-Bird.
Yeah.
So we had the Canadian contingencies hanging out there. And, you walk into the room and there was, 20 or 30 people sitting in front of, 30-inch LCD monitors with headphones on playing the game. It's all completely silent, because they're all just playing the game.
Okay.
So it was just
I can picture that.
So it was a little creepy. That's why. It was just because it was dead silent. Everyone's playing Mass Effect. I played it for probably about 35 or 40 minutes, while I was waiting to do some interviews and do some stuff.
Right.
I had a great time with
it. What was it you Twittered about it? You said something along the lines of game of the year or something.
Yeah, people are saying this is like game of the year. This is like getting 10 out of 10s, and people are really starting to get excited about this game. Oh, well, get excited. They have been.
Yeah, BioWare's got the chops for it. They've proven they do great RPGs.
It was also, and you'll hear this in the interviews, it was just interesting that, these guys, let me just put things in perspective. They started working on this title before the Xbox 360 shipped.
Okay. I mean, that RPGs have longer life cycles than non-RPGs, but still, that's pretty impressive.
Right, it's just a long time. We think the Xbox has been out. You can barely, if you close your eyes and you squint, you can really kind of barely remember what it was like to not have to, press the guide button or, have complete access to your friends list while you're playing a game.
Or more relevant for most of our listeners, probably BA. Before achievements.
Before achievements, right, okay. Or being able to turn on and turn off the console from your controller.
I've never understood that one. I have to get up to put a disc in anyways.
Right.
So, anyways.
So I did that. We did that. And then Monday night we went to the launch party. BioWare had a launch party and they invited me and a few others, some of the community members along.
And how was it?
It was great. It was at a planetarium up there in, was it the Telus Planetarium? I don't know. It was a planetarium. It was a cool party. Although, I got to tell you. I think I told you this. They did these door prizes, which was great. They did the door prizes at like 7:45 before the party got going. I'm like, what are you guys doing?
Okay.
Maybe they had some later on because I didn't hang out, so maybe that's possible.
See, you're an early to bed kind of guy.
Well, no, we had to shoot our stuff because we had to get up at 4 a.m. because I had to catch a plane to go to Washington, D.C.
4 a.m.?
4 a.m. All right, and I will tell you this right now. I've always held to this. Everyone talks about hell being a hot place. Hell is not a hot place. Hell is a cold, dark, snowy place like Edmonton at 4 a.m.
Ouch. Yeah. There's some unhappy Edmonton listeners right now.
No, it's first of all, it was beautiful up there. It was open. It was expansive. Everyone was very nice up there.
Yeah.
Really nice folks. But it was 4 a.m. comes. 4 a.m. is not a happy time to be up, regardless of where you are.
4 a.m. is fine if you've been up all night.
Right.
If you went to bed and had to get back up, 4 a.m. sucks.
4 a.m. really sucked. So I got up at 4. Video Monkey came back here to Seattle. I went on to Washington, D.C. via Chicago.
Okay.
And I'm supposed to fly into Chicago. I'm supposed to go from Edmonton, Chicago to Dulles.
Right.
Get to Chicago. We all get on the airplane, and the airplane apparently won't start. So we have to load off the airplane, and they rebooked me going to Reagan National, which is closer to Washington. Right. So no problem. So we went down there, and then I was there because Robbie Bach and some other dignitaries were on stage.
Jerry Rice,
who I'll tell you about in a minute. They were on stage announcing the Is Your Family Set campaign, which is a family safety campaign. And part of that is we announced the Family Timer, E.
Right.
The Family Timer is shipping when?
The Family Timer is shipping in early December.
So the Family Timer is going to be available in early December.
Right. By the way, have we said when the Fall Flash is coming out?
No, but the Family Timer is going to be available in early December.
Okay.
So the Family Timer is going to be out. And so I was on stage with we were at a middle school. It was a couple, 300, 400.
Okay, that makes sense.
In Washington, D.C., and they made the announcement on stage. So I'm there with Robbie Bach, who's the boss, the big boss.
Yep.
He's in charge of everything, our division. Jerry Rice, who is let's
be clear, the best wide receiver in the history of the NFL.
Yeah, he is 3-time Super Bowl champion. Is he a Hall of Famer?
I don't think he's been retired. No, he hasn't been retired 5 years yet, so he can't go in yet.
And then, of course, last year, I'm sure you don't know this, but he was on Dancing with the Stars.
I do know that, actually. That's the beauty of RSS feeds. You learn all sorts of random things.
So we're getting ready. The event was at like 10 o'clock in the morning. And part of the event was that towards the end of the event, I was going to bring some kids up on stage, and they were going to play Dance Dance Revolution together.
Okay.
So I'm like, I
sense a problem brewing here.
So I said, I'm trying to show Jerry this thing. I said, hey, you want to play? This is before the event, so it's like an hour before. I said, do you want to give it a try? He's like, yeah.
You did Dancing with the Stars. Let's play DDR.
Yeah. So I get him on DDR, and we're doing it. And he made the classic DDR mistake. Do you know what that is?
He lost his placement on the pad?
He looked down.
Oh.
Because when you look down, all of a sudden, you just can't recover.
You lose the rhythm, and you're... Yeah.
So he finally just said, I can't do this, and he stepped off, and I just smoked him.
You beat someone at DDR?
Yeah.
Wow.
So that was pretty funny. So we played DDR, and then... Well, anyway, so we did the event, and then also on stage was...
That's the title for this episode, by the way.
Which is?
The one where I beat Jerry Rice at DDR.
It was kind of crazy. And then also on stage was the president of the PTA.
Okay.
The president.
No idea who that is.
Of the Parent Teacher Association. You know the PTA.
I'm a member. Yeah.
So it was really, really interesting. She really got the crowd going. But it was, everyone was really nice. And I'll tell you the funny story, though. We're in Washington, D.C. Literally, we're like 5 blocks from the Capitol. I mean, you can walk out, take a left, and you can see it, which is really, I mean, you've been to Washington, right?
Yep.
It's just so wonderful to see the Capitol. It's really humbling. And we're there, and I just realized, I looked out in the crowd, and it's like half of the audience was like PR people, because there's handlers.
At the middle school?
At the middle school, because Jerry Rice had his people, and the PTA had their people, and the Xbox had their people. And there were,
where are our people?
What do you mean?
I don't have any people.
I don't have any people either. I had to walk to and from the event, from the hotel. I had no people.
Okay.
So anyway, so I did that on Tuesday, and then... Wednesday, and then caught a flight back Wednesday night, and then came back in the office Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday.
You were busy.
It was a very busy week, and then Next week, since we're talking about travel, where am I going next? I'm going to L.A. next week for the L.A. Auto Show. We're doing an event down there.
The Auto Show?
That's what I'm being told.
Okay. Oh, I can see the tie. Okay. Yeah.
There's some tie-in with Forza 2 and Nissan and a couple other things. I'll get more details about that next week. So let's talk about games, since I've been rattling on about other things. Did you play COD 4 this week?
I've had so little game time this week. No, I have not played COD 4 yet.
I'm the one who's been traveling, and I even got to play COD 4.
So I was gone last weekend, got back Sunday night, and then in between catching up on sleep and work, I think I've probably had a grand total of like 4 hours of game time this week, and it all went into Halo 3. I hopped on, played with some friends, went to bed.
Yeah, okay.
So I haven't played COD 4 yet. I need to. I haven't played Lego Star Wars The Complete Saga yet. Need to.
Okay.
Barely put any time into GH3. Need to.
Right.
That light blue controller is just, maybe it's just the light, but it's close enough to white that when you pick it up, I look at it, I'm like, what's wrong with this picture?
Well, it's one of the light blue ones from Japan.
Yeah.
We talked about this last week, I think.
It just looks weird.
So I've also played Naruto. I played the B movie game, which you know what kid games are for.
Saw the movie last night.
Oh, you did? You like it?
Yeah, it was good.
Okay. So B movie. I played Tomb Raider Anniversary Edition. Still working through the orange box. I spent some time with Time Shift, which was a lot of fun. I also like to point out that Guitar Hero 3. I played Guitar Hero 3.
Did you do well? What achievement?
Pop the Major Nelson stuff, did you? Very well.
I don't believe you, but okay. Okay, wait. Who got that for you? Did KP do that?
No.
Or who was it?
No.
It wasn't you. You did not 100% a song. Who did
it? It says right there, 100% of the song. I got to.
Who did that for you?
Major Nelson did that.
No. Who was playing with the controller at the time that achievement was
Speaking
earned?
Of that, we'll have Trixie along later on. We'll have Trixie along later on, who's going to talk about the 5th anniversary of Xbox Live.
Yay, Trix.
You know, we're gonna deal with the 5th anniversary stuff. I want to talk about Mass Effect right now, because I've just been talking about that. So I want to play the interviews I did when I was up at BioWare. This game was really looked great, played great, and I want to share with you some of the conversations I had with some of the team from Mass Effect.
Cool.
All right, Mass Effect is going to be in stores very soon. I'm here with Casey Hudson, who's the project director. Casey, you've got to be excited about this. This game is finally shipping.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it. We've been working on it for about 3.5 years now, and we're really happy that it turned out pretty much the way we wanted.
You've actually been working on this title longer than the Xbox 360's been for sale. That's got to be pretty interesting to be working on a title before its launch, then seeing all the great titles that have come out since launch, and you guys are just, you're the icing on the cake this holiday.
Yeah, and then when you think about the fact that we had to picture what we were working on from way back before any of these games came out, before we could even really get our own technology working, and yet we had to get this huge team working on a huge project, building all of this technology and all this art before we could even really visualize how far we would have to take things.
When you look at Mass Effect, obviously it's huge with story. It's so story driven. How do you go about developing the story, and walk me through a little bit of the creative process for the folks at home about how you do this and come up with this epic tale that's Mass Effect?
Well, I mean, first of all, we wanted to make sure it wasn't going to be something derivative. We wanted people to know what they would love about it, but at the same time, we wanted it to be fresh and new. So we actually, we kind of just went back to what we really wanted to create. What do you want as a player? Mm-hmm. You know, want to experience in a space adventure. And so we went back to like the most basic ideas of, looking at a science fiction painting and looking deep into it and imagining what you'd want to do there and what is it that excites you. And so we literally created a huge list of things that we would want to do, things that players wanted to do, and opportunities we wanted to give people to experience in this science fiction universe that we were creating. And then that kind of created a whole framework for the kinds of stories that we would tell and the kinds of gameplay that we'd be able to provide.
Highly anticipated, I think, would be an apt phrase for this work, for this title. When I was sitting down and playing it a few minutes ago, it's definitely an RPG, but there's also some shooter elements there. How did you take this and create this hybrid?
Well, the thing that we learned with our some of our previous games, Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic, for example, people love the story. I think people really identified with the characters and the fact that it's a shared experience, and it's just this very immersive experience where you're not moving linearly. You can look around in your environment, go where you want to go, talk to people, decide how you're going to fight, across the galaxy. But the thing that we knew that we wanted to really develop was the way that the story was experienced, the conversation system, just the entire, the story experience was the thing that we saw as an opportunity, really for the first time that a video game had the opportunity to really rival the cinematic experience of a live-action movie.
This is such a smart game. When I say smart, because there's a lot going on, and you get to really enjoy it and unfold. It's got to be great for you that it's been so well received, as opposed to a lot of the quick shooters that are out there, which is run and gun, run and gun, run and gun.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think this is common to a lot of people that have worked on the game, is that I think it's the same for a game that's maybe a, whether you're playing a straight up shooter, or even if you sit down and watch a great science fiction movie. There's still that missing piece where you kind of want to stop sometimes and explore the environment that you're in, and you want to check it out and kind of make it your own adventure. And that's the thing that we try and provide in Mass Effect is characters that actually respond to what you're doing, and decisions that you can make, so you can really change your story, you can change what you're doing, and yet you have this amazing shooter-style combat. You've got physics, you've got vehicles. You're deciding how you're going to explore the galaxy. You're picking points across the Milky Way and deciding that you're going to go there when you have a whole world of other opportunities to go to. And these are the things that we think really make an experience your own. And then you kind of fall in love with the experience that way.
I kind of just answered this, but I want to rephrase it a little bit. What would you say to somebody who's watching this right now, and how would you describe this game? And they think, it's probably an RPG like Coder.
Well, I think it actually is. It's very much like if you took a present-day third-person shooter in terms of the way you move and the way you shoot, the way you fight, but you immerse that inside a larger kind of RPG context where, and all that really means is that the story is about you. This is a character that you get to create, and you get to make decisions about where you're going to go. So It's that kind of very familiar gameplay, but set inside a world of decisions that you're on.
Does this present any options with such, you described it being very open-ended, does it present any options for you as opposed to some other games, which is, they know the player's going to get to this point, you have to trigger this cutscene, and so on and so forth. It's got to create some really logistical problems as you're developing the title.
It really does, and that's probably, that's something that we would never have been able to do if we hadn't kind of come this far in developing games like Baldur's Gate, Neverwinter Nights, Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic, Jade Empire. These games really helped us, not only develop the skills to be able to write this kind of interactive story, but also to be able to have the technology to do this, because it actually takes a huge amount of tools, technology on the development side, so that this kind of thing is even possible. And then with that stuff in place, we can literally have a writer who's done this before sit back and create a story that is very carefully crafted. And it's very much a writer's kind of experience. And yet, as you play it, it feels like it is totally unfolding every moment according to the decisions you're making.
So I have to ask you, Casey, you've obviously been working on Mass Effect for 3.5-4 years now. What's in your Xbox 360 right now? What are you playing?
In my Xbox 360 right now? It hasn't gotten quite into my Xbox yet, but Ace Combat 6, I think, okay, is the next big one. I like the big controller. I'm excited about the graphics. And I'm going to be playing, we don't have as much opportunity to play and finish games in development, but I'm going to be playing a ton of different games now.
Right. Casey, I appreciate you giving me time today to talk about Mass Effect. Congratulations on the game shipping.
All right.
All right, a lot about Mass Effect is the story, but the other really exciting part about it is the artwork. I'm here with Derek Watts, who's the art director for Mass Effect. Derek, thanks for coming on the show here.
Hey, no problem.
Let's talk about this for a second. This is such an amazingly visual game. Where did you start with this, and how did you come up with the concepts?
Usually it starts as early as us just getting stuff on paper. Even before the story's written, we have a rough idea it's going to be a science fiction game. We'll start to do production paintings, some ideas we might want for worlds, maybe a snow world, maybe a big city, just trying to suss out what we want to do. And then as the writing gets more laid down and the story starts to get more fleshed out, we'll start to take concepts and really work on those from there.
But when you're dealing with the future, how do you decide whether you're going to go with the Blade Runner dirty future or the Jetsons clean and shiny future? How do you decide that?
That was actually a decision we made pretty early. Casey and myself both like the clean look of science fiction movies. We wanted to stay away from some of the dirtier looks. There were some games coming out using the same system and same engine that were going to be a bit more cluttered, a bit more wear and tear on them. So we wanted our game to stand out more, and we found out that there were going to be less games that had this clean, sleek, minimalist look to it almost.
What are some of the concerns that you have to take into account as you're designing this game? We talked about, you kind of said, okay, we're going to come up with clean, but you're really designing everything all the way down to, I mean, objects in the world that maybe some players may not even see.
Yeah, we designed everything. Every prop, it all had to be done. I mean, most games do that. Every place will get drawn up at some point or another. We actually had to put in a bit more wear than we wanted to in the game just to make it a bit more realistic. We got to a point where it was too clean and materials didn't kind of hold up, so we actually put a bit more scratches and dirt on there just to put a bit more realism in there.
So it's not as dirty as Blade Runner, and it's not as clean as, say, 2001, Space Odyssey, yes. Right? It's somewhere in between?
Somewhere in between, yeah.
So now, as the story progressed, did you tweak the style a little bit to kind of help the story along, or how did that work?
Certain planets went through massive changes, yeah. Actually, Eden Prime, the first planet you start off, changed quite a bit. It was supposed to be this idyllic farm world. It's going to be an early morning setting with a battle. But to really get your emotional attachment to this planet, we had to really rough it up a lot more, make it seem like it had been completely destroyed, and that feeling wasn't going to be there. If it was early morning, there was cattle running around, and you had a whole bunch of guys looking at this planet, and go, well, a couple people are dead, who cares, let's get out of here.
Exactly.
So we burnt it all up, it's destroyed. Some of the other planets, we had thought they were going to be real jungle-looking planets, but trying to get a different look, maybe a better feel for this point in the game, too, as we understand how the story's unfolding. You know, a certain planet's going to be a really emotional part. This plays a pivotal point in the story, so we kind of darken them up a bit more.
Give me a little clue here. So as the art director, did you get to, like, put your initials someplace or anything cool like that?
No, I didn't have time. Did I do that in the last game? I think I tried in the last game. And, you know, so many things get touched by the people.
Right.
You don't have as much control as you used to. I used to be able to do a bit more than I can now.
Right.
Now I've kind of fallen back on some of the technology. I don't know it as much as I used to.
That's the way it goes. I appreciate your time today, and we're looking forward to Mass Effect. Thank you.
Hey, no problem. Thanks.
All right, I'm here with Drew Karpyshyn, who's the lead writer on Mass Effect. Drew, a lot of this game is about the writing. I mean, you're the star of the game.
Well, I wouldn't quite go that far, but you know, the entire writing team of Mass Effect, we had four writers on it. We feel that it's really given us a great opportunity to sort of bring narrative into the video game to a level that's never been done before. You know, BioWare is known for its storytelling and its writing and its characters.
Right.
But with Mass Effect, with the digital acting, the amazing art, the great performances we've got out of our digital actors, the cinematics guys who've given us all the facial expressions, mm-hmm. and all the things that make them come to life, it's really allowed us as writers to see our words, you know, be realized in a way we've never seen before in a video game. So I appreciate the compliment, but...
Well, I had to compliment you because I need to back up a little bit. Can you tick off some of the bullet points on your resume? I mean, people know your work.
Okay. Well, I've been with BioWare for about 7 years, so I'm the I was the lead writer on KOTOR, Knights of the Old Republic, Star
right.
Wars.
Huge for the original Xbox.
Yeah, very, very well-received game. I've worked on a number of other BioWare
titles. Did you do
KOTOR
2?
No, KOTOR 2 was actually Obsidian. It was a different
right.
company other
That's
than
right.
BioWare.
That's right.
So, you know, we had, you know, gave them some advice when they asked us about characters or things like that, but they actually did the writing.
Okay.
I've worked on a number of other BioWare titles, Baldur's Gate, Neverwinter Nights, a little bit on Jade Empire, and of course Mass Effect.
Mm-hmm.
My own writing, I also write novels.
Oh.
So I've written, well, a couple of novels, for example, the Mass Effect prequel novel, Revelation,
right.
Which is an interesting read. It's set a little bit before the game. It's a good introduction to the universe. I've written a couple of novels in the Forgotten Realms, Dungeons & Dragons
mm-hmm.
Series, and I've written two novels for Star Wars, actually.
Mm-hmm.
One called Darth Bane, Path of Destruction, which was released last year and spent about 5 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list.
Wow.
And the sequel to that, called Rule of Two, is being released in December of this year, December 26th, actually, which is kind of a strange day. But
day after Christmas? Yeah, why not?
Yeah. And, you know, I've got a lot of good hopes for that one, too. It seems to be people are really excited about that.
So I want to talk about Mass Effect, and how do you write for a game that is can take so many branches? It's not linear storytelling, and that's this obviously goes back to KOTOR and some of your other games. But how do you go about writing it? Do you have like a concept of here's the story arc and where I want to end up, and these are the roads that are going to get us there?
Yeah, in some ways we do. We kind of have a broad story arc. And we kind of figure, you know, ultimately we want people to see certain what we call gold moments, you know, things that we want them to experience from one side or the other. You know, you're not always coming out of the direction we initially planned.
So give us an example from KOTOR with a lot of people play so
for
there's
example,
no spoilers.
The gold moments, obviously the biggest gold moment was the revelation of who you really were.
Yep.
In the game. And another gold moment in KOTOR would be the encounter with Bastila after she's been captured,
mm-hmm.
You know, where you either win her back to your side
mm-hmm.
or decide to join her on the dark side or
right.
kill her off.
Right.
You know, we knew everybody was going to encounter Bastila at some point and deal with her. But, you know, how they deal with her, like I said, whether they convince her to come back to the light, whether they kill her, whether they join her on the dark side, that was really up to the player to decide how they want to deal with that moment. So we try to say, here's these amazing experiences we want, and then as a player, what are the different ways you would want to approach that? And then most of the writing goes to try and, you know, set it up so that when these experiences happen, they feel organic and they feel natural and logical and they feel like they fit into the story as a whole, no matter which direction you take.
Now, as a writer, obviously you're a gifted and talented writer. You're on the New York Times bestseller list. Sounds like you got a hit game coming up here with Mass Effect. Where do you get your inspiration? I mean, do you just lock yourself in a room and start staring out the window? Because I know, you know, when I was in college and I was writing papers, or you know, it's like, God, I got to do a two-page paper, and it was deadly. Here you're churning out a book.
Yeah.
How do you do that?
It's kind of a funny thing. I've been asked, whenever I get asked about my ideas, I kind of have to pause, because the truth is, for my own stuff, the ideas are just there. I've got, you know, a folder of probably 300-400 ideas that, you know, maybe 10% of them will ever get worked into a story or a
sure.
book or a game or a screenplay. But then when you come to work at a place like BioWare, we have so many creative people, you just feed off each other.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody has an idea and they'll pitch it out, and somebody will say, oh, that's really cool. And then they'll start running with it in a certain direction. And, you know, you just keep kicking things around. And, you know, I'll be honest, a lot of the stuff that comes out of those sessions is stuff you never want to see the light of day.
Right.
But, you know, there are those great golden nuggets in there that you have to mine out. So for me, it's really a matter of looking at all the ideas that I have or that we generate here at BioWare as a team, and saying, what are the ones that we feel are worth the time and effort to polish up and turn into what we hope are beautiful narrative diamonds?
Now, you've got... When you're writing these, when you're sitting down, you're writing the script or some of these scenes in Mass Effect, you obviously have all these characters in your head. Do you go to the designers and say, this is what I was thinking for this character, or this is how I think this cityscape looks?
Mm-hmm. The way we go with Mass Effect, the way we worked, was we would come up as the writers with sort of an initial idea for, say, a character or a setting. You know, and we would write a very short sort of document with sort of some of the key points, you know, you know, what are we trying to get across? Is this a sinister character, a commanding character, a romance character? You know, what species are they? What are the identifying features of those species? And from that point, we then start to get other teams involved. So you'll get the artists involved. They'll do some concept art. They'll take it in a few different directions. And then we'll look at that with the concept artists and say, you know, oh, I like that. I don't like that. And that's that process of feeding off ideas mm-hmm. that I talked
about. So not only does it happen at the writer level, but it also happens at the artistic level with
artists?
It happens
graphics. Pretty much at every level.
Right.
That's the amazing thing about BioWare is it's a very safe environment to be creative in. Nobody's going to, you know, laugh at you. No one's going to say, oh, that's stupid.
Right.
You know, it doesn't mean they always agree that it's the greatest thing ever, you
right.
know, but they will take what's good out of your ideas, work with it, and help you improve upon them, and you'll do the same with their ideas. So it really is a very collaborative process, which is kind of a nice situation.
You talked about the books you've written and obviously the games, and I'm sure you've got a screenplay or two in your mind as well. What are some of the differences versus writing for a book versus writing for a video game?
Well, I think for BioWare games anyway, the biggest difference between a book and a BioWare game is scope. So, you know, as I look at our BioWare game, you know, you have about 400,000 or 500,000 words of dialogue.
Wow.
And that, you know, that's including all the graphics, everything like that. So it's the equivalent of about 15 to 20 movie scripts. You know, you have 6-7 characters that can join up with you that are, you know, full characters, and we don't know which one you're going to take or which ones you're going to pick to go with you.
But you have to have them all fully developed,
though. Exactly. They're all fully developed, because you know, it's up to you which one you take. With a novel, you know, you can't have a novel that has seven main characters, or, you know, a main character and seven secondary, primary, secondary characters.
Right.
You have to pick and choose. So with a novel, you're kind of forced to go into a much smaller scope, and then you can go a little bit, you know, deeper into the internal aspects of that, you know, get into the thoughts a little bit more, and, you know, I'll control the action in a novel, whereas in the game, I try to present options to the player that allow them to ultimately control where the action goes, make the decisions to get an experience that they want, as opposed to, as a writer, the experience I want you to get out of my writing.
Where do you think we're going to go from here in terms of video games and specifically storytelling? I mean, movies are pretty much, I mean, we've been using the same formula for almost 100 years. Video games are so new, and the storytelling is so new now that it's rich. What do you see as somebody who's an experienced in this area?
It's actually really interesting that you mentioned movies, because that's the analogy I like to use. If you look at Hollywood in the, you know, the 1910, 1920s, there was a lot of new technology and new techniques coming in. You know, they were learning to tell stories. The idea of using a cutaway to a new scene or a flashback was unheard of.
Right.
You know, and then they started developing sound and color and, you know, special effects. And once they got all that locked in, then it became about refining the process of telling story.
Right.
And that's kind of where we are now in the video game industry. We're just kind of reaching that level where I think the technology is getting to the point where it's very realistic. Digital actors are realistic. You have your you know, real emotion that can be conveyed on the screen. You have full voiceover. And I think we're at the point where hopefully other games will see what we've accomplished in Mass Effect and realize story doesn't get in the way of gameplay. It's part of gameplay. It's part of the whole experience, and start integrating their stories more fully into the game.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, in the past, you know, it's kind of been tacked on. It's like, okay, shoot a guy in the face and then say a couple lines that might explain why you did it.
Right.
Move along.
Right.
But I think we're starting to enter an age where you'll see, once people become familiar with the technical aspects of telling the story, of delivering dialogue, you'll start seeing them integrating those stories and those narratives into the games themselves and making a better experience for players.
So is the goal for you as a writer to get me, or my listeners in this case, just emotionally attached to your characters? Is that what you want?
I think that's a good way to look at it. You know, it's all about getting emotional payoffs for us.
Right.
And to do that, you obviously have to get them emotionally attached. So we want to make characters that you love or you hate, or you feel something towards, so that when you have a choice of how to deal with them, what actions you take, you actually want to get some kind of gratification in that action, you know. Mm-hmm. Or if we put you in a difficult situation where you have to choose between party members, you know, choose who's going to live, who's going to die, which may happen in Mass Effect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we want it to be an agonizing decision. You want to say, you know, there's reasons I can let this person survive. There's reasons I can see letting this person survive. And we want you to feel a real emotional pull and get this experience that you don't really get anywhere else, because, you know, in a book or a movie, you don't get to make that decision. You kind of feel it once removed. You can sympathize with the characters, but in Mass Effect, you are the character making those decisions.
You have a very rare opportunity here in that you're going to ship a game in a week or two that a lot of people generally most likely are going to love, and you're going to start getting feedback from the community. Oh, I really like this storyline, or what happens here, or what happens there. You then can continue writing and then deliver content over Xbox Live. That's got to be exciting.
It really is. I mean, BioWare's always taking great pride in developing our community of fans, you know, our website and that, and listening to what they have to say and seeing what they like, what they love about our games, what resonates with them.
Mm-hmm.
And with Mass Effect, we're kind of taking that to the next level. You know, we've presented this game that, as you said, you know, we're getting a lot of great press, and you know, it seems like people are really going to just love this game, and they're going to react very strongly to it. And because of the age we live in now, you know, with the internet, everyone can get their opinions out there.
Yes.
Within minutes.
within moments.
You know, and it gives us a great chance to see what people loved about Mass Effect and what they want to see more of, which is very exciting from a...
So do you already have a couple of maybe storylines? Do you think that you're like, well, you know what, I think they're going to really like this?
We have a few things that we think people are going to like, based on the fact that, you know, the team here likes it, because
right.
Everyone here is a fan of video games and a fan of BioWare games. So, you know, we kind of know if everybody on our team likes something, there's a good chance the fans are going to love it too.
Right.
So, you know, we have a couple things. Again, I don't want to spoil it. I don't want to give
sure.
it away. And
no
on
spoilers.
The off chance I'm wrong, I don't want to, you know, put anything on record.
Right. So, that's fine.
But, yeah, we have a few hunches.
When you look across the video games that are being released on the Xbox or, you know, even the PS3 or... I don't even want to say the Wii, because the Wii doesn't have a lot of story-driven content. What excites you this holiday season, other than, you know, other than your title?
Well, I think the interesting thing is, for the Xbox, it's been an amazing run here.
Yeah.
You know, BioShock did some really innovative things with the way they tell a narrative and setting the mood and the scene and creating this ambiance. You know, Halo 3, of course, is the 500-pound elephant in the room that,
right.
you know, is...
Yeah, but that's all about multiplayer.
Yeah.
You know, people think that that's all about multiplayer. And I know Frankie would kick me in the shins if he heard
me
saying that.
It's very interesting because, you know, Halo, the novels have done surprisingly well. Like, people who don't... Some people don't even know there are novels out there, but I mean, they sold a huge amount, and it's because they set up this great story, which they didn't go into it as deep in the game as, say, we did it at with our games at BioWare, but they gave themselves this background to work with, and then they fleshed it out by adding narrative, and I think that's a big part of what's sort of grabbed Halo, a portion of the audience. You know, they see this compelling sort of narrative of you know, humanity versus these different alien factions, and it's really drawn them in, and I think that's one of the keys to great video games is you develop this in our case a galaxy where you can tell all sorts of different stories and have all sorts of different characters that have their meaningful you know narratives take place, and I think that's what really keeps fans coming back over and over and over.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Star Wars did it, Star Trek did it, you know, these great things where you can just tell multiple stories in this great setting, and the setting feels familiar, but you can still tell new and exciting and fresh stories. And that's what we're looking for Mass Effect. We want people to know what it's like.
You talked about Star Wars and Star Trek and Mass Effect, which also is based in space. The common thread being science fiction here. Mm-hmm. How do we break out of the science fiction genre and do? I don't know what the answer is, but how do we break out of that genre?
Well, I mean, there are other things coming out too. I mean,
and I'm sorry. Obviously Halo is also space related.
Yeah, Halo is science fiction as well.
Sure.
You know, I think the thing is. People are naturally drawn to it because it's a lot easier to accept the fantastical in science fiction or fantasy.
Right.
You know, because you know that...
It's the future. Cars can fly.
Yeah, exactly. We can do whatever we want, so let's explore it. But I do think you're starting to see in other things, you know, an opportunity to open up the story element, right? And
right.
I think that's really how you delve into these things, you know. I haven't actually, you know, played it myself. Assassin's Creed, for example.
Sure.
You know, they've kind of got a compelling, kind of a looks like a very compelling sort of story background going on there. You know, and it's not exactly what I'd call science fiction.
Right.
You know,
it's biblical.
Yeah. So, you know, you've got these things coming out that I think just recognizing how important story is. If you don't have story, you need flash and special effects.
Right.
And that naturally leads you to science fiction and space.
Right.
And as you get story to be a more important element, you start to need less, you know, you can still have those special effects and that to add to it, but you can actually get an incredible experience set in sort of a more modern world or a more contemporary world or ancient past.
So by that stroke, what we were talking about earlier about movies kind of, mm-hmm. you know, taking the same vein in games about 80 or 100 years ago. That means, that said, you know, a lot of the early movies should have been science fiction, which, you know, there's Metropolis and there's some other ones as well. So that's kind of follows suit to that.
Yeah, it does. And I think, I mean, it's almost like video games though have sort of the advantage of we had special effects before movies did in their history.
Right.
Right. They kind of had to start with a lot of story and then build special effects into it. And then it kind of goes in cycles. You'll see, you know, a lot of blockbusters with huge special effects and not great stories. Then you'll see a cycle of movies where they have, you know, more character-driven movies and right. maybe not as much of the big budget. And it kind of goes back and forth. Whereas video games, we're just starting that cycle. And I think what you'll see is now that we're getting story, you'll probably see a lot of video games that have something more, and I hate to use moral or message because that sounds so heavy-handed, and games are supposed to be fun, but you'll see things that reflect the concerns of the everyday world, you know? People play Mass Effect or people who played KOTOR have said to me, you know, oh, were you talking about, you know, the situation here, this
right.
political thing? And I always say, well, not specifically, but these are things that are in my mind
right.
because they're in everybody's mind. So, you know, they come out in our artistic work.
Right. I appreciate your time. Do you want to give out your gamer tag?
Actually, you know what? I'm ashamed to say I've been working so hard on Mass Effect, and we had this thing where if we plugged in our practice Mass Effects into our Xbox,
right.
It got
bad things.
Bad things happen.
Bad
so
things happen.
I don't actually have my gamer tag right now.
Okay, that's fine. Then we will. I will leave you alone for that.
Right.
So, I appreciate your time today.
All right.
It's been great, and I think people are really going to enjoy Mass Effect. Thanks so much for all the work you put into it.
All right, no problem. Thank you for the time.
I am up here in Edmonton, Canada with Jay. Jay, I'm not going to try to pronounce your last name.
I think that's probably wise. No,
so how would you pronounce it?
Jay Wataminyak.
And you are the community manager for BioWare.
I am indeed.
So I you know, I shouldn't make fun of you because I have a very difficult to pronounce last name as well.
Hugely difficult.
So
I actually saw it on your card there. I think you need more letters in your last name.
I need
name.
More vowels.
Yes. I've got quite a few, so if you ever need them, just let me know.
Good to know. So I'm up here in Edmonton. You guys invited me up here. We're shooting some video for Xbox.com. We're talking about Mass Effect. It's got to be exciting to have this game finally out there.
Yes,
or to be out there very soon, I should say.
Very soon. November 20th is the big release day, and within a day or two, it's worldwide release. That's very exciting. Personally, it's exciting for me, not just because the folks at BioWare have worked so hard on it. I mean, a huge team. Casey, the producer, mentioned this morning that upwards of 120 people working on this game at any one time at its peak, and that's an astounding thing to mention. But personally, it's exciting for me because this is the first project that my brother, Preston Wataminyak, has been the lead designer on.
Okay.
So it's sort of his pet project as well. And it's great to see him in that capacity, his ideas in the game, and managing his teams.
Do we have any of your ideas in the game?
Well, I would imagine that Preston and I, growing up, playing a lot of games together, conversations when Mass Effect got started
right.
about 3 years ago, You'll probably see some of my influence in there too, which is very nice.
So people have been waiting for this game, and they're pretty, I don't want to say pretty excited, they're very excited.
Very excited, yes.
What do you think drives that excitement? I mean, they haven't played anything; they've just been soaking up everything, or soaking everything up they could read online.
One thing that I'm always impressed with, dealing with fan communities for so many years now, is the level of excitement that can be maintained over a very long period of time.
Their stamina.
their massive endurance. And I know Ray Muzyka, one of the founders of BioWare, uses the word passion a lot when he gives interviews, and he talks about the staff and he talks about the fans and the community. And passion is really the perfect word, because I don't know how you remain interested in something that you are not going to get that until years later.
Right.
That's unproven, that you're just getting little tastes of here and there, maybe a 30-second video, maybe a screenshot. But these people are devoted.
Well, it also lends to the fact that our audiences are very creative, and they can look at something and go, wait a minute, that actually looks pretty interesting. So they're able to kind of sniff out what's interesting to them.
One of the most important aspects of a role-playing game, and BioWare being in the business of making role-playing games, is your character sheet and character development and character evolution, being emotionally involved and invested in the character that you have. So when you said being able to take a small piece that they are shown and turn it into something huge, like the character sheet, for example, all sorts of mechanics can be inferred by just looking at a character sheet or even a screenshot that shows some of the GUI. And I think that's where the fans, sort of the hardcore fans, could go, okay, I see what they're doing there. I see some of the mechanics coming into play. This game's making a little bit more sense. Sort of the behind the scenes, what we used to call the sort of the dice rolling element of the game, how that all works, and being able to give them hints at that along the way. It's difficult because obviously things are unfinished and you're still in the development process, so things are changing daily. But to be able to pass along a small piece where they can infer much more from that, I think that's probably our job.
So you just said something that probably scared some people, like, wait a minute, there's dice rolling in this game?
That term for mechanics going on behind the scenes
sure.
that you don't have involvement with. But yeah, Mass Effect is a role-playing game, so you want to have things that affect how your gameplay goes. And when you make choices for your character, you want them to be meaningful within the game and not just, lights and smoke and mirrors.
So I'm going to talk to some other folks. Hopefully I'll get Ray on and chat with him. But tell us what can the community expect from Mass Effect and BioWare moving forward?
First and foremost, for Mass Effect.
Now that you're an employee of EA.
Now that I'm an employee of EA, exactly. Well, the deal has not closed yet, but we're very close.
Right.
Very close. A lot of exciting things coming out of that. But to talk about community and Mass Effect, the fact that for the first time we were releasing, this is our first next-generation game, next-gen Xbox 360, Xbox Live, obviously, you owe
yes.
your claim to fame is the excellent system that Microsoft has set up for Xbox Live. That is very exciting from a community point of view. And the fact that downloadable content, like post-release content, Mass Effect has been engineered to, it's going to be a trilogy. So it's not just make this game, play the game, wait 2 or 3 years for the next one to come out, and there's nothing in between. We are very excited from the community angle that, okay, here's the game, but then who knows, however amount of time passes, here's another element that may lead you into the next game. Here's another element to the universe. Here's another element. And these are all official things.
Oh,
that's very exciting.
A lot of a lot of the listeners will hear that and they'll go, wait a minute, that means they're just trying to get some more money out of us. that whole argument. And
yes,
as somebody
indeed.
Who works on the game, what do you counter to that?
Counter to that, well, we have presented Mass Effect is, you get your 30 or 40 hours of gameplay. There's an exploration component. All of that, all sort of the marketing speak stuff.
Yeah,
for
the bullet points on the back of the box.
Bullet points on the back of the box. But to me as a fan of science fiction, I love this universe. I'm intrigued by these characters, by these races. And I know you're going to be talking to the lead writer today, Drew.
Yep.
He has created a spectrum of things to be interested in, and we cannot contain it all in the first game. That's why we set it up as a trilogy. But even more than that, we can take things outside the box a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
We can add planets. We can add different races. We can add different stuff that maybe we don't have time for in the strict development process. And the opportunity to develop these things in between these large releases, that's a big opportunity for us and an opportunity for fans.
Yeah, because, obviously what people want, I'll speak on behalf of the fans. They want, a Mass Effect MMORPG.
they don't want stuff to stop. And
right.
If you're playing a game that has drawn you in considerably, that you feel bad if certain characters die and all that kind of... If you're emotionally involved with it, you don't want the experience to end. And you also don't want to wait 2 or 3 years for the next thing to come out.
Yeah.
So I think probably the big thing we can provide is, yes, the universe is living and breathing, and it will continue after you are finished the game.
So you're managing community for BioWare. Obviously,
yep.
You're pretty busy nowadays, but probably not so much a year and a half or 2 years ago. It's been kind of quiet.
It's been a little quiet. This is our first major release for quite some time. We had Jade PC not so long ago. But what was great from a community point of view is taking a look at all the Neverwinter Nights stuff
right. And
the Knights of the Old Republic stuff and going, okay, we have a time here, year and a half, about where we can change some of our processes. We can go back and maybe change the backbone of what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of that stuff has been, okay, we've been percolating for about a year and a half, and it's going to start coming out. Fans are going to start seeing it with the release of Mass Effect, with the release of Dragon Age, and mm-hmm. all that kind of stuff. All the stuff we've got coming out in the pipe, there's been a lot of talk and chatter about things like Web 2.0,
right?
Which is essentially, how can we get people to participate?
Mm-hmm.
How can we use the group work, the group mentality, the group, all of that, to further participation and community? A lot of that thinking has gone into what we've done in the last year and a half,
mm-hmm.
but that's all been behind closed doors. And I'm very happy, as the sort of community guy, myself and Chris Priestley, the community coordinator, we're going to start rolling some of this stuff out soon. Which is very nice.
So you teased the hell out of some people right there, didn't you?
I think we did. That's strictly what we're designed for. You can't mention a lot of stuff yet because it's okay, we want to make sure it comes out right. And there's been, as you mentioned, a few recent developments. We want to make sure that we're in partnership with the stuff going on. And also, with regards to EA, there's a lot of resources we now have access to.
Yeah.
And I want to make sure okay, before we move on something, well, have they got a better system that we want to pull in and use ourselves? Because that's really what I'm seeing this whole... All the EA stuff is, okay, I've got awesome new resources that I can pull from. They have some vast stuff that I wouldn't even think about before that are now at my disposal.
Right.
So I need to make sure okay, we want to step carefully. We want to step with the best foot forward.
This is a huge holiday season for Xbox owners.
Yes, it is. Holy
man. We had, at Halo 3 in September. We've got Mass Effect. We've got Rock Band, all these titles.
Mm-hmm.
How do you make this title stand above all those? Granted, when you look at it, it's wildly different from anything else out there. Do you think that's enough to have it stand on itself?
Well, a couple things we don't want to bank on, because you're only as good as your last game, of course, and BioWare certainly is aware of that. But the fact that this is a major release, and
mm-hmm.
we haven't done a major release for quite some time, that's going to build some excitement. The fact that this is our first next-generation game for BioWare, the fact that currently right now, in the realm of role-playing games, there hasn't been a great deal of innovation, and
mm-hmm.
we think Mass Effect is chock full of innovation. So if you are in the market for role-playing games, and if you're in the market for a great story, if you're in the market for something that I think, and I think when you play the game you'll think so as well, pulls the medium of playing a game much closer to a movie experience mm-hmm. than before possible. And that's not just a graphics upgrade. It's
right.
an involvement upgrade. It's a participation. It's sucking the player into an experience rather than dictating something to them.
So I have to ask you this because I posted on my blog I was coming up here, and everyone said, you have to ask them why the limited edition is not available in Canada. So what's the story there?
What's the story there? Well, keep in mind, BioWare is a game developer.
Right.
We have fine folks that do the writing, do the programming, do the art.
Right.
But then we once the baby is created,
yep.
we do have to hand it off. And decisions elsewhere, they get made elsewhere for reasons that are certainly beyond...
You and I.
My pay grade, yeah. With that, though, for Canadian fans, it is an unusual move, granted. But again, as a developer and a guy in charge of the community, we just have to sort of be around to, okay, well, a decision was made somewhere.
And we'll have to deal with it.
And we got it. I'll
corner Shane Kim on that one as well.
Probably a good idea. I mean, like, and you're no stranger to fan feedback.
Yes, I think
you understand that.
Yes, they are a very they are very, to your point, passionate.
They are passionate, but and with reason. I mean, they wait for so long for something, and if it's not quite what they're expecting, you're going to hear about it.
So,
and that's the nature of communication.
That's what we do here, man. Yeah. That's part of also the Web 2.0.
Exactly.
To your point a little earlier.
We want that. We want that feedback. We also want that to give up a little bit of our control.
Yep.
BioWare, quite famous for being, you know, the forums and all that, very sort of well manicured and well tailored. Well, if you want to participate in this idea of Web 2.0, you need to surrender some of that control.
It becomes a mosh pit.
Exactly. I mean, there's dangers there's risks, but it's also how
there's also rewards.
Forward. Yeah, huge rewards.
Yeah.
So we got to push forward and get into that ourselves.
All right, I'm going to let you go, but I have to ask you before I let you go.
Yes.
What's your gamer tag?
What's my gamer tag? Justice.
Justice.
Yep.
You have Justice.
Justice.
That's nice.
Yep.
That's a good one.
That goes way back.
Oh, really?
That's like Quake days.
Yep. Okay.
Way back.
Good to know. So Justice, we'll look for you on Xbox Live, and I appreciate you having me up here, and I think folks are really going to enjoy the game.
Yes, indeed. Well, thanks for coming out. It was such a nice surprise to hear that you were coming out to take a look at stuff.
Had to support Mass Effect, man.
Fantastic.
All right, thank you, BioWare staff and everyone up at in Canada who really made me feel welcome, and also our MVPs and all the community members that were invited up.
That was a cool event. That would have been nice to go to.
Yeah, it was really nice. It's too bad we can't do them larger scale because they're very small and because they're manageable. And
right.
Well, I wish that we could do them larger, but I want to thank them for inviting me along. It was great to do that. So I want to let's shift gears now and talk about 5th anniversary of Xbox Live. Let me tell you what last week we kind of talked about. It was going to be the biggest announcement ever, I think is what we said. Or you said that.
No, you said that, and then I laughed.
And then I laughed and said it isn't. But here's what I'm doing for the 5th anniversary. So we've got this show, which airs. I usually have my shows up on Sunday, which is when I'm doing this show right now. And I've got this, or, you know, whenever you're downloading it. We talked about that as well.
Right.
But every day this week leading up until the 5th anniversary, which is, when is the anniversary, E?
November 15th.
November 15th, which is Thursday. Leading up until Thursday, every single day this week, I'm going to have a different interview with one of the movers and shakers of Xbox Live. So tomorrow, Monday, I've got someone. Tuesday, Wednesday, and then Thursday, I'll wrap it up.
And you're going to keep them secret till you post them?
Yeah, I'm going to keep them secret till I post it. But these are all people that that were pretty influential in developing Xbox Live. Of course, E was also influential, but he's on the show every week. So that's why I wanted to have you to start off this celebration, this jubilee, whatever you want to call it.
So since I kind of think of Live as a child, do I need to buy it a present?
Yes, you do.
Crap.
Right.
I have to go shopping.
5th anniversary. What do you get for 5th anniversary? Do you know? I know.
I.
So you know how they got the 50th anniversary?
Oh, yeah.
It's this.
Amber, gold, blah,
right.
blah, blah.
Right. Do you know what 5th is?
Not a clue.
Wood.
Wood?
Wood.
As in?
That's what I was told. I haven't checked it. Wood.
That's interesting.
So.
I've been married to you 5 years. I'd like to beat you with this
2x4. Yeah,
exactly.
Clunk, clunk. So the 5th anniversary of Live, E, you joined the team before the service shipped.
Before the console launched.
Before the console launched.
Yep.
So what were you doing for a whole year and a half before whatever it was? Let's talk about that.
Yeah. So I joined in April of 2001. So about 6 months before the console went on sale.
Right.
And wow.
Where to start?
What were we doing? I mean, when I got here, there was... You know, I don't remember the number off the top of my head. There was probably already 30, 40 people on the Xbox Live team when I arrived. And I got here kind of at the day that we formed the operations team, but there were developers and testers and program managers that had been working for a while on what is Xbox Live.
Right.
We didn't even have the name back then.
Right.
But what are the features we're going to build? What are the things we believe in? What do we think is really important that we deliver in this product?
Right.
And, you know, there were some really well thought out things, and people had kind of already put some hard stakes in the ground.
Like one of the famous ones is that it was going to be no 56K modem.
Yep, broadband only.
This is in a day when 56K modems, I mean,
were very
common.
Broadband penetration in North America in 2001 was not terribly good.
Right.
I mean, today it's, I think, roughly 50% of households.
Is it?
Something like
that. You would
that.
Know better than I would.
I'm trying to remember the numbers, but it was less than half that back then. But by saying broadband only, it allowed us to do all sorts of things like make voice mandatory across
right.
all games,
right.
which to me is one of the things that really makes Live special is the fact that no matter what game I'm playing, I know I'm going to be able to, you know, chat with my buddies and talk strategy or, you know, talk about what happened, you know, in the NFL last weekend or whatever. And if you didn't have that guaranteed level of bandwidth, you couldn't do mandatory voice.
And one of the things I'll talk about with some of my surprise guests that I have on this week is we talk about that, and one of the funny features of the voice, which has since been dropped,
yes.
is
voice masking.
So we'll talk about that with a few friends.
All right, put your weapon. I mean you no harm.
You're great. Okay, thank you. I see you doing his voice masking impression. So where what has been different from today then versus now in your mind? I mean, it's
probably the single biggest difference is back then, I mean, 2001, 2002, most people did not think we were going to be successful.
Right.
They did not think that we'd identified a successful, you know, market.
Right.
That, hey, you know, online play is free on the PC. Nobody's going to be willing to pay for this. It's you're not adding any value. It's not better than what's already out there. It was pretty deafening from a lot of directions that – you guys are not onto something. You
right.
shouldn't be doing this.
Right.
But the people who were here, and I think in your interviews, looking at what you have on your whiteboard up there,
right.
you're interviewing the right people.
Right.
But them plus a few other people had a vision and believed in it. And I think a lot of it was we were all gamers.
Right.
And we're like, if we had something like this, wow, it'd be really cool. I would play that. Well, no one else is building it, so I guess we better go do it.
Right. Well, the Dreamcast was around then.
The Dreamcast was around, and the Dreamcast had some online games, and it was cool, but it was very different from what we thought Xbox Live could be. And it supported 56K. You didn't have the voice. You didn't have things like the single friends list. And I think sometimes, at least for us that are on Live all the time, we forget about things as fundamental as I have one friends list that works across all games.
When your team is in charge of doing the operation side of things, 5 years ago, no one really had done this with a console to this scale. How many servers did you know how to buy, or how did you guys figure that part out, or are you just making it up as you go along?
Well, we had a benefit back then of something we don't have today,
which is
but in the when Live launched, the way you got on was you went to the store and you bought a starter kit.
Right.
And the starter kit had your code.
Right.
And it had the disc with.
And it had a headset.
It had the headset on it.
Right.
If you were in the beta, you got a t-shirt in there too. And we had the advantage of knowing how many starter kits were getting manufactured.
So it's pretty obvious.
Yeah.
You look at how many you sold. This is maximum number of people that
how
are.
How many you were manufacturing.
Right.
Even
okay.
before they get to the stores.
Right.
You know, hey, we're making X of these. Where you had to guess was how many of those people would play at a single point in time.
Right.
And that was a little tricky for a while. But. Being able to control that as opposed to now where it's, hey, you've got an Xbox 360, all I have to do is plug it in, go to the dashboard, create an account, boom, I'm done.
Right.
We didn't have any of that back then.
Yeah, but one would argue that, but you know how many Xbox 360s we shipped.
Yes, but it's a lot easier to judge, I mean, with the starter kit, if you went to the store and you bought a starter
you're
kit,
most likely
for
going
50
online.
Bucks, you're going online.
Right.
You're
right.
going to sign up.
Good point.
You know, we know over time, you know, what percentage of people that buy an Xbox 360 log in and play.
Right.
But there's always the opportunity when something huge comes out, like a Halo 3, COD 4, Mass Effect, whatever, that people are going to get really excited and a bunch of people who aren't playing online are going to decide, I want to go online right now, and they can. Because all you need is your 360 and a broadband connection.
Right.
Plug it in, sign in, boom.
You're off to the races.
Yep.
Good to go. So we've got, as E has mentioned, he sees my list up on the whiteboard of the interviews I've got coming up here. And so starting Monday, starting tomorrow, or whenever you listen to this, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then Thursday, which is the actual fifth anniversary of Xbox Live, I'm going to have interviews, special interviews with some of the movers and shakers that helped develop the product. And then actually what I want to talk right now is we're going to stop. This is an interview I'm doing with Trixie. Because she's going to talk about all the cool stuff that she's got planned for the community on the community section of Xbox.com.
Cool.
As I've been talking about all throughout the show, it's the fifth anniversary of Xbox Live, and Xbox.com has some cool stuff in that we're doing for the fifth anniversary, and I have with me Trixie.
Hello.
Who is you've been planning? Well, you and I have been planning fifth anniversary stuff for a year now.
Yeah, just about. I mean, we've been talking about it and wondering about it for months and months and months. And just started getting into the real nitty gritty of planning it in about July.
Right.
I would say, hey, there's E outside the window.
What's he doing outside the window? Yeah, he's standing outside.
Oh man, okay. Oregon boy.
All right. So, what do you got? What's going on with Xbox.com?
So what we've got is, I think it's really cool stuff. So we've got an Xbox Live is 5. Big package. It's that sounded bad, didn't
it? It's quite all right.
Sorry. It's the landing page, and it's got tons of cool stuff. I think some of my favorite things that are on there are memories from the live launch team.
Yep.
So we've got a bunch of people that you've been talking to.
Yeah, and we'll talk to this week.
Right. Right. Talking about what the challenges were, if they ever had that holy crap, there's no way we can pull this off moment, which, you know, there were several. If you read it, it's up on Xbox.com right now. You know, what new features we've added since launch that are their favorites. And I think they're really interesting stories to hear from the team that was behind it all. And it was cool for me to catch up with people. I mean, some people have actually moved on out of the Xbox group, are still at Microsoft in other groups, and it was cool to, you know, catch up with them.
Yeah, because a lot of people were here, and then they moved on. They moved around the company like with any big company.
Yeah.
And you caught up with them and chased them down and said, what was your favorite thing?
I did.
And you, so because you've been here.
I've been here since before launch.
Before launch.
Yep.
You worked on the beta program.
I did.
So let's talk about that.
Okay.
That was pretty wild.
The beta program was pretty wild because those beta testers out there that are proud to say that you were a first wave beta tester, the one that got the man bag and all that kind of stuff. You know, there was actually a beta before that, which was the technical beta, which were our super geeks that were running that. So
I was in the beta, you know.
Were you in the technical beta though?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. You're almost super cool, but
not quite.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually, you know, that's something I've mentioned here on your show before, too, is that little 12-page manual that came with your beta kit, your starter disk I wrote. Yeah.
Right.
So I had to describe three different ways to connect to the internet through your Xbox, and I had to do it in 12 pages in three languages. So.
You know three languages?
I don't.
Okay.
But the space allotted was pretty...
Right.
Small. But and it was funny, too, because at that time I was on the documentation team. And, you know, we just had to make it really, really, really simple. Like, dumb it down as much as we could. Like, these are the things you're going to need for this kind of connection.
Right.
And then my boss, Patrick King at the time, kept saying, well, just drive him to the website. Drive him to .com. Which I'm like, okay, cool. So, you know, more stuff I can push off on them. Great. Until it turned out, guess what? You have to write what's going to be on the website. I was like, wah, wah, wah.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah. You know what's the very funniest beta story I have, though?
Tell me.
The name of this story is the Japanese finger peripheral.
What?
Yeah. So back in the old days, back with original Xbox, we didn't call controllers and junk like that accessories. Mm-hmm. We used to call them peripherals.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened was...
Very computer...
one of the beta games was whacked. And it was a cartoon game show kind of game. It was pretty funny. But it featured cartoon characters. All the cartoon characters had four fingers on each hand.
Mm-hmm.
So we went to beta in Japan. And the Japanese beta started on November 21st. So it was right a week after we launched here in the United States. We started the beta program in Japan. Mm-hmm. Well, the number four apparently sounds like the word for death in Japanese. Four is a bad luck number in Japan. We couldn't send a game over there where characters had four fingers, so we had to have them all. They all needed an extra finger.
So they had to go back into whacked and put another finger in?
Yep. Yep, that is the Japanese finger peripheral.
That's pretty funny. I didn't know that. I never heard that story.
Yeah.
So if you're over in Japan, 4 is a bad number.
I guess.
Especially if you're a cartoon character.
Yeah.
So what are some of the cool stuff? You have some giveaways.
I do. I have some giveaways. And I also want to tell you about this. We have programmed out like every second of this really, really cool for us and hopefully for you guys out there too week
right.
on Xbox. So, for example,
you've got like pages of notes.
I know. I brought in my notes. I didn't want you to have to look stuff up.
That's okay.
But I'll just give this to you quick. And everybody can go to xbox.com/liveis5 and check it out. 5.
So xbox.com
not with an F, but with the number 5.
/liveis5.
Yes.
Okay.
IVE. Monday,
mm-hmm.
the 12th, the Gamer mm-hmm. Chicks Ladies Night game is Guitar Hero 3. I think that is an awesome.
And everything you're going to read here is up on
the website. It is all up on the website.
Okay, go ahead.
But Guitar Hero 3 is great for, you know, it's just one of the greatest new live games, I think. It's really mm-hmm. fun. Family Game Night is going to be Lego Star Wars. The Complete Saga. That is on Tuesday the 13th.
Okay.
Like I said on the website, you know, Star Wars and Xbox Live go together like Tauntauns and Stink. So.
That's very cute.
Thank you.
That's very cute.
Wednesday, you know, is kind of arcade night, usually just because new games come out, but we're not going to play a new game. What we're going to do is, in remembrance of the late lamented Revolt, mm-hmm. we are going to play Mad Tracks, which is another little
similar
toy car game.
Similar, and you can download that from arcade.
Yes, you can from Marketplace. Then on the 15th, this is, are you ready? Are you sitting down?
I'm sitting down.
So spectacular. You are going to... I don't know.
I'm going to die.
Out.
Go ahead.
Your head might explode. Well, the games that we've signed up to play are, you know, Halo 3 and Gears of War, which are two of the most really popular games, most played games on Xbox Live. So you can do that. But also, there's a play and win with spectacular prizes.
Mm-hmm.
If you are registered for this play and win and you get on and you play any game on Xbox Live on November 15th, which is our actual anniversary, you could win some kick-ass prizes.
What are some of the prizes?
You know, the prize that stands out most in my mind, I haven't dived down into it too much, but you can see it all on Xbox.com, is that really cool silver briefcase filled with the wireless.
The VIP one.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Rolling like a VIP.
That's cool.
And then the thing that I think that your listeners in particular will get really super stoked about is the game with the developer.
Right.
Because our friends in marketing, especially Andrew Perry, have put together this massive, awesome list of... game developers that you can play with. I mean, there's...
The list just goes like on and 20, on and on.
I mean, you can play with the Halo Wars dev team. You can play...
What are you going to play with them?
You're going to play Halo 3 with them.
I see, okay.
Or you can also play with Halo 3 with the Bungie team.
Mm-hmm.
The Gears dev team is playing Tony Hawk. Not Tony Hawk himself. I mean, the Tony Hawk right. dev team. Valve guys will be playing Ace Combat team, Moha team, Guitar Hero. You could play Guitar Hero 3 with those guys.
You have
guys.
Got a star-studded lineup.
It is so star-studded, and I think it's really, really great that all of these people... I mean, we've got... This stuff starts at 9 a.m. Pacific.
Right.
You know, and it keeps
12
going...
12 noon Eastern
until,
goes...
Yeah.
Goes till
yeah,
people run out of gas.
All day long. I mean, seriously... call in sick that day because there's going to be so much fun on Xbox Live. You aren't going to want to miss it.
So xbox.com/live is the number 5.
No, the number 5 and then IVE.
That's confusing.
Well, you know.
Can you get another URL that also redirects to live is 5? You know, just,
about,
or go to xbox.com.
How about xbox.com/major is a brat? How
I'm just telling you, people, live is 5, verbally it translates, but the number 5 just.
People go to your website.
Go to xbox.com/community. It's all going to be there.
Yes, yes, definitely check that out because there is great stuff. I also re-interviewed 5 of my really early gamer spotlights, including Hockey Stud 29.
That's right.
Our very first tournament winner at the Fever game.
Where's he now?
Gridiron Chowder.
Well, go read.
Graduated from college.
Well, go read the interview.
In the real world. And Essen Rada, she was the very first female gamer that I put in the spotlight. Mm-hmm. She changed her gamer tag to First Lady of XBL. She's one of my gamer chicks. And it's really cool. I'm really excited
about that.
About it. Oh, but I forgot about... Oh, my God, I got so distracted by Thursday's awesomeness that I forgot to tell you two of the most important things. And then I'll leave. Relax.
No, it's okay. No, stay as long as you want.
Stop
go ahead.
Stop looking at your watch.
I don't even wear a watch.
I know. I'm flipping you crap. November 16th is Friday, and it's Fragdoll Friday, and the girls and I cooked up this idea that we would play an old-school original Xbox game, one
Good
that
call.
Was backward compatible, of course, right. but Ghost Recon. Huh?
Oh, boy, that one was huge.
It was so huge, and the girls are stoked about it. I saw Jinx at World Cyber Games, and she was really excited about it, and so was Roulette.
Ah, oh, the girls. I miss the girls.
I know. They're nice. We're planning what they're going to play in December and January, too.
Good.
And then this month's Xbox All-Nighter is going to be from sundown on Saturday the 17th till sunup on Sunday the 18th, and it is Return to Castle Wolfenstein.
Wow, that's way old school.
It's so old. You can hunt Nazis in the snow until your face turns blue.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Remember that game?
Yes, I do remember it.
That was a huge, huge game.
I do remember it.
I remember, I was just thinking about that game when we had Hoobastank came here to HQ to do their game with Fame so long ago. It was before they had their big breakout album, but that was cool. That was one of the games they played. It was Castle
Wolf. So you have just lined up a bevy of stuff to do any time of the day or night, as usual. I mean, Xbox Live, there's always somebody online to play with.
Absolutely.
But you're really rallying the troops this week because you're pulling out all the stops for Five.
I'm so excited about it.
I want to talk about that.
Oh.
Let's talk about that. Yeah, talk about that. What is that and how do I know what it is, but I want you to explain to people how to get it.
I don't know what the official name of this thing is. We started joking around about it in the planning meetings when we were talking about this and designing this and looking at, you know, concepts. We call it the man bag, or you can call it the MRS if you like. But basically, this is what our first wave of beta testers got. Not the technical one, but the real life.
The only way you could get this bag was if you were a first wave beta tester.
Yes.
And this was never for sale anywhere.
No.
This was never available.
I mean, maybe if you mugged somebody, you could get it. But please don't resort to violence. And let me describe this sucker to you, and I'll take a picture and I'll send it to you, Mage, and you can put it up.
We got
to
put it up on Flickr.
Yeah, so it's black and kind of has a rubbery feeling, and it's got silver, and it says Xbox, and the little zipper pull has a little it says Xbox on it in green, and inside this baby is a headset.
Right.
Because, of course, before the advent of Xbox Live, you didn't need a headset.
Right.
It's got the old-school headset. It's got the beta
like strapped in there, too.
Starter disc.
The headset's, like, strapped in there.
It's strapped in there with these cool...
Where's your manual?
You know, it's not in here. I don't know what the hell.
How ironic. Your manual.
I know. The one thing I worked on isn't working. And then this spectacular thing, it was a limited edition orange memory unit
for the original Xbox.
All this stuff. I mean, this stuff isn't going to do you any good unless you still have your original Xbox. But
here's the best thing right here.
The best thing is the T-shirt that
it's a black T-shirt.
Inside. It's a black T-shirt. It says "I've got great hands" on it.
And that was what we handed out.
And this
was
what we handed out.
That was part
beta
of the package.
Testers. I actually did a story. We did a gamer speak on memories from beta testers, and there was one guy who said that he loved this T-shirt, but his wife wouldn't let him wear it.
Really?
Yeah. Yes.
So are we going to give these away?
We are going to give these away. We actually were digging around. I like to, you know, hang out in crawl spaces.
We went to the attic.
We went to the attic looking for our Christmas decorations, and we found a bunch. I'm not going to tell you how many. But, you know,
you found a box of these things.
A good hidden treasure trove of these things, and they're in perfect order. They've never been used. These aren't the, like, rejects. They're terrific. And we want to give them to people that missed out on the first time. So if you got one the first time, please don't ask me for one, because that's just kind of rude.
So how do you win them?
I don't know.
You haven't decided. Well, and I need to figure that out.
We do need to figure that out. But okay. I think you could start by sending me an email at xlmail@microsoft.com and telling me why you need one and, you know, why you're not going to sell
email
it on eBay.
Trixie.
Email Trixie.
And she's got some. And you're going to send me pictures of these to put up on Flickr, right?
I am going to send you pictures.
Okay, I need pictures of everything. You know, I'd like a picture of your manual, too.
I wonder if it's.
Your early. Trixie, the early works.
Trixie, the juvenilia, if you will.
All right, well, listen, great job on the fifth anniversary schedule
Thank
of
you.
Stuff. And I also want to, you know, I haven't mentioned this, is that I know our marketing department is working on some stuff, too. They just haven't told us what it is.
Well, no, the plane win.
Well, the plane win. I'm just saying they've got some cool secret stuff planned as well.
They do have some cool secret stuff. I think by the time you listen to this, you still will have to wait a couple days to find out what the super
depending
secret
upon
stuff
when you're
is.
Listening to it.
But really, the point is, everybody out there, this is not some scheme to make money off you, piss you off. This really, honest to God, is a thank you to our people, especially those who have been with us since day one. It's cool. You know, when I was talking to Hockeystud 29, he's got his original gamer tag. I mean, right. You know, a lot of those guys still do. I mean, the people.
We were just talking. E and I were talking about, you know, he's got his. He was the first gamer tag.
Yeah.
He'll actually talk about that in just a second.
Will he ever stop talking?
No, he won't. He won't.
Yeah.
And he asked the same thing about you.
Oh, what? So. I come in here like 10 minutes a month. He's here like 2 hours every week babbling about his stupid dog and his stupid football games.
Thank you, Trixie. Everything else you want to leave folks with?
I would like to say that my feelings for Eid have nothing to do with you Xbox Live members. You guys are fabulous. You guys are what keeps this place rocking and keeps it a success. And really, thank you.
So Live is 5. Congratulations. And check out xbox.com/community, and you will find out what Trixie just talked about and more. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you, Trixie. So that's a quick look at what's going on xbox.com to celebrate the 5th anniversary of Xbox Live, which is Thursday the 15th of November. Where were you 5 years ago, E? Were you in a rack room someplace making the servers get ready for the launch?
No, I was sitting in my office staring at, you know, a couple of monitors I had laid out around the desk just waiting for something to
happen. Now, this is before we get into the name the game, which we're going to do in just a second. This is, I think we've talked about this before, but in case we haven't, you're actually the very first person to, you got the very first gamer tag on Xbox Live.
Yep.
You won the very first game on Xbox Live, which was?
Yes, it was NFL 2K3.
And then, of course, the other part of that is who lost. We know who lost.
The first loser on Xbox Live was Racer X,
right,
who used to be part of the operations team. He's now over in Turn 10 doing Forza stuff.
Yep.
And he was the third gamer tag made.
Right.
Something like that.
So E was the first gamer tag. Why didn't you choose A?
Wow, because my name doesn't start with a letter A.
Okay. So 5 years ago, E was when did you actually play that game? Well, that must have been early in the beta, right?
It was before the beta. But it would have been either late July or early August of 2002. I don't remember.
Because the beta was like from late August. There was different waves.
Yeah, it was, and there were multiple times where we were, you know, creating accounts that didn't really count because they weren't real gamer tags. They were test accounts that would get wiped
right
before the system went live.
Right.
So once the system really went live for the first time where, okay, everything from now counts,
right,
that's when I created E.
So E is one of the longest running gamer tags ever. It is the longest.
It is the oldest gamer tag, yes.
So that's your claim to fame. All right. We're going to continue fifth anniversary of Live celebration. We've got 5 big interviews coming up over the next 4 days. Well, you were one of them. See, that's the whole thing. Is I kind of made you, even though you're closer, you were kind of the first interview.
Well, thank you.
So the second one is Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. So we'll have that going up there. So right now we're going to do Name the Game. The Name the Game you want to explain it?
You play a sound, and then we ask the audience to name that game.
And I give them prizes. So here's the name of the game for last week. All right, name the game. That was E.
Naruto.
Did you play that yet?
No, I have not played that yet.
I really like the visual style of it. But I really like the visual style of that game.
It looks like fun, but there have been so many games coming out lately. Can we arrange it so that games do not come out during football season?
Now, remember, E, people don't get games gratis like you do. They have to go buy them.
Oh, I buy plenty of games.
I know you do. You and I buy. We do buy plenty of games.
You've seen my living room. Yeah, I buy plenty of games.
I've seen it once before Roomba chased me out. Or Chibi Roomba, whatever it's called.
You haven't been there since I got Chibi Roomba. You would see how many games I had if you had come over for Halloween.
Right. That's
which
true.
Which you didn't.
I did not. So I want to Naruto. That was Naruto. I want to congratulate. Let's see, Corker Z. It looks like 2 Z's, AZ. I can't figure this gamer tag out from Chicago, Illinois. Congratulations, Naruto. You grabbed yourself a Turtle Beach Air Force X1 headset. So congratulations. And then we'll have a name the game for this week. Now I'm going to change it up a little bit, or am I?
Why are you asking me?
I'm just thinking. I'm thinking. This is what happens when you do this shit. When we don't, you know, we talked about it last week. We just kind of go. This name the game that I'm going to play for you last week. You know, for the past few
this week,
for the past few months, I've been playing Xbox 360 games. But I'm going to go deep. So this is going to be actually an original Xbox game to celebrate the 5th anniversary of Xbox Live.
Perfect.
So does that make sense?
Yep.
All right. Here it is.
This is Expo 2. I am in the air.
All right, that's Name the Game for this week. If you think you know what that is, send me an email, major@xbox.com. In the title, please put what you think it is. Name the game, colon, and then your guess. And then in the body, put your gamer tag, optional, where you're from. I'm still looking for those Xbox 360 owners, listeners, or podcast listeners out there in Russia.
You didn't get one yet?
Nope.
I'm surprised.
Unless I got caught up in my spam filter.
Which is entirely possible.
Yeah, it is possible. I just thought
you need to go sort through there. Because there's someone listening right now
who's
pounding
angry.
Their table.
They're going, no, I sent it to you.
Yep.
He's either pounding the table and throwing the vodka back. So
there's a way to celebrate the 5th anniversary.
What are you going to do to celebrate the 5th anniversary?
That's a really good question. Oh, you have a package.
Hello there. Thank you. So it feels like whenever we record this, I get packages.
Just the time of day, I think, that we do this.
What am I getting here? Oh, this is good. This is
there you go.
Fear Files and Empire Earth. So that's
it's awesome. Empire Earth 3?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So thank you, Arnie. You didn't tell me what you're going to do to celebrate the 5th anniversary. You going to have a party?
Sorry.
Is he having a party?
I was thinking back to Empire Earth. I used to know the guy who founded Stainless Steel Studios. Cool. Sorry, what?
You going to have a party?
I wasn't planning on it, but I got to do something.
Okay.
But the thing is, if I have a party... The anniversary is on a Thursday.
Right.
Everyone doesn't will matter. Throw a fit because I'm not doing it on a weekend. Not to mention, I haven't completely cleaned up from Halloween yet.
Still?
I still have, like, cobweb on the bushes in the front yard that I need to go get
down.
You're
that guy in the neighborhood?
And I finally took my Christmas lights down.
Right.
Because I didn't want to be the guy that left them up 12 months out of the year so that they'd be there during December. So I don't have Christmas lights on the house anymore. But I haven't finished cleaning up from Halloween yet. If I have a party, then I'm not going to have the place clean until Thanksgiving.
What about Chibi Robo? He's not doing his job.
Chibi Roomba.
Yeah, whatever.
And the problem is that if there's too much stuff on the floor, you can't safely turn him loose because he's going to overeat and kill himself. So because there's streamer in places and there's stuff everywhere. So
and that's the stuff you can see.
Yeah. Then there's, you know, little tumbleweeds of dog fur. But we're getting really off topic now.
All right, so we'll. I think we're almost done, right? Well, actually, no. We got to do Xbox 101.
We got to do Xbox 101. And aren't we also forgetting something else?
We talked about the family timer. We can talk about those. We can talk about
other things to throw out.
Yeah, we got some other things. But let's go ahead and do Xbox 101. Funky.
Xbox 101. This time with E and Major Nelson.
Thank you again, Funky. So, Xbox 101 for this week. We're going to kind of follow the theme from last week. We'll call it Xbox 102. Kind of two for one.
Two, okay.
So, controller recharge.
I was actually, you know what, I'll put you on the spot. You want to do five to celebrate the 5th anniversary of Live?
Okay.
I'm not even looking at you because I know you're going to give me the look of death.
Yeah, so just, we hadn't actually discussed that until just now when you said that. So, let's see if I can possibly come up with... five things. They may not be interesting, but okay. So, number one. Recharging your controller with the Play and Charge kit. You've had a long night of playing.
Right.
Your battery's getting pretty low. You're getting ready to go to
bed. Your controller battery.
Your controller
battery.
Not your
personal battery.
Possibly both. So, you want to recharge your battery, but you don't want to leave your console on all night, and you don't have a quick charger. What do you do?
What do you do?
Connect the Play and Charge to your controller.
Okay.
Connect the Play and Charge to the console. Once it starts charging, you can turn the console off.
Right.
It will go into a very low-power sleep mode where it's still recharging the battery in the controller.
Excellent.
And then when it's done fully charging, it will turn itself off.
Fun.
Ta-da. Done.
Done.
And that's number one.
Number one.
Number two.
Again,
here's another recharging one using your Play and Charge kit. You do not have to plug it into your Xbox 360.
Uh-huh.
You can pull power off any handy device with a USB port. So you can plug it into your PS3,
mm-hmm.
your laptop,
mm-hmm.
your USB hub, your home server, whatever.
I could even do my TiVo.
Yes.
My TiVo has USB.
Yep. Just plug it into that. All it needs is standard
any
USB
port in a storm,
and you are good to go.
Good.
So that's number two.
And also, maybe this is three. This is just an FYI. Getting back to your Play and Charge kit. The Play and Charge kit, when you plug it in, it automatically binds the controller.
Yes.
If it's not bound already to that console. But it does not automatically convert it to a wired controller that's only power.
That's correct. The when you're playing with a play and charge kit, you are pulling power across it, but nothing other than power
right.
goes through the play and charge cable. Everything else is still happening wirelessly, just like it did before.
So that's number three.
That's number three.
It's got number four for me.
Number four.
Number four.
Okay, I'm looking around at the stuff on Major's, you know, bench of things.
My equipment rack.
Yeah, trying to identify something. Oh, here's one that obviously, you know, is appropriate for you.
Mm-hmm.
So I read a thread somewhere this morning where someone was talking about issues with the IR remote not working very well with their 360.
I see where you're going with this.
Yeah. So if you look at your 360 or perhaps the one of Major sitting right here in front of me, they're shipped with a little bit of plastic over the IR window
to
keep it from getting scratched. Take that piece of plastic off. The remote will
not work
better.
But now you're going to scratch it.
Do you want me to?
No.
I can hit it with the microphone. That'll take it out.
Thank you.
Okay, that's four. And now I have to come up with a fifth.
Number five.
I know what it is. Where's your controller? Where's that blue thing? Give me that. So go into the dashboard.
Okay.
Go to the marketplace blade. Go to... Why is nothing... Oh, okay, got it. Go to active... Not active downloads. Where's what I want? Go to account management, I think it's in. Download history.
Yes.
Not many people know that download history exists. Basically, here we keep track of everything that you've downloaded from the service.
Ever.
Whether it's a theme, whether it's DLC for a game, a TV show from Video Marketplace, whatever. This is really handy if you've got either multiple boxes in your house or you've taken your MU and your account over to a friend's house, whatever.
Which is completely good.
Yep, you can do that. No worries. Just go into download history. Instead of having to remember where did I, you know, download that piece of content from or that yep. expansion pack or whatever, just go to download history. It's got everything sorted in reverse chronological order. Would that be reverse?
Reverse chronological. Yeah, I guess yeah. so.
Okay. Starting from newest to oldest.
To oldest. So you can actually scroll through there and you'd see where I... Somewhere around there, if you go back a few pages where I downloaded like the Halo 3 beta, which is no longer available.
Exactly. But you'd see it on there, and then you can click on it, and one of the options you'll get is download again.
Download again.
And boom, you've just put that on another box. So like in my house, I've got multiple 360s.
Yep.
I want to have the arcade games on them all. This is an easy way to go ahead and mark multiple pieces of content as, you know, hey, download this here too.
There you go. Five Xbox 360s to celebrate, or five Xbox 101s to celebrate the fifth anniversary of Xbox Live.
Ta-da!
So we're getting close to the end of the show here, so we need to wrap it up since this has been a long show. What do you have for gadgets you want to talk about?
So I'm on a phone hunt, but this time it's not for me.
Yeah, because you came over here a month ago and poached my phone.
I did not poach your phone.
That's my phone. That was my phone.
I said if you wanted it, you could have it.
You put me in an uncomfortable position.
Oh, God. It's very nice, by the way.
Thank you.
I like it a lot. However, so I'm happy with this phone. My significant other needs a new phone. Her Razor died. She's now using an old Razor that she had retired.
Right.
Which is sending anywhere from half to two-thirds of her text messages.
Tell her not to send any. That'll shut her up.
Yeah, I'll let you have that conversation with her.
Okay.
No, I'm not going to go there. So I need to get her a new phone. So I've been looking at some of the phones you've got lying around here, which I have not poached. We were in the mall last night. We stopped into a phone store and we were mm-hmm. taking a look at things. So the two that you've got,
yep.
you've got the AT&T Duo by Pantech.
Pantech Duo.
I have to admit, I kind of like that phone.
Let me pull this out. Hold on.
So for people who don't know what this is, the reason it's called the Duo is it's a candy bar slider phone that slides two ways. It slides vertically to give you your number pad to dial, and then you turn it, and it slides horizontally.
To give you a full QWERTY keyboard.
Yeah, full keyboard for texting, email, whatever. It's a nice little form factor.
Mm-hmm. I took that with me when I went on my trips last week.
You have a missed call.
Yeah, I know.
Who called?
That's probably my phone forwarded on.
Is that the wife?
Probably.
It's one of the people who you're interviewing.
Oh, excellent.
It's uh-huh.
Okay.
Probably wondering where you are.
Probably wondering why I'm not doing that interview.
Yeah.
So the Pantech Duo available from AT&T is really quite nice. The other one that I have, which is plugged in under there if you want to pull it out.
It's actually Speaking of powering off USB,
yep.
Currently recharging off your PS3
is the T-Mobile Shadow,
I got to admit, it's really cool.
It's very nice. So this one, go to the T-Mobile site if you want to take a look at the Shadow. It opens up. It's got this. It doesn't have a full QWERTY keyboard under it, but it has a quasi QWERTY keyboard.
It's got one of those BlackBerry style 2-letter per button keyboards,
and it works nice.
The industrial design on this is very nice.
The only thing I don't like about this one is, I didn't tell this to you, but that dial in the center,
yeah,
you can go up and down messages like in a mail list,
right?
But it's not consistent. Like, one revolution doesn't equal a whole screen.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of weird. I haven't quite figured it out yet, and I got to dig around to see if there's a setting to make that better. But otherwise, I really do like
that. The screen is gorgeous.
Yeah, the screen's ginormous. Oh.
And it's very bright. It's very nice looking.
So that one, I was using that one when I was in Canada.
So if anyone's got a good suggestion for a phone, it's got to be GSM. Let me know. Post on Major's blog.
Send an email to,
post on the blog. I'll read the blog.
You will go ahead and read those messages. All right. We are going to wrap it up right now because we have, let me just also be clear. The shows that I'm going to post Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, they are not going to be like this. It's not you and I sitting here. This is just the interview that I'm going to post.
Just the interview.
You're not getting an Xbox 101 and all the rest of that stuff.
We used them all up.
These are special editions is what these are. These are fifth anniversary editions. Limited edition of the show, even though they're not limited. But
sure they are. There's limited because there's four of them.
There's four of them. Plus this is five. So five shows, 5 years of live, and good
what's
stuff.
What's the fifth thing in the Christmas song?
Five golden rings.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. So it's five golden rings.
Okay.
Wow. I don't know why I knew that one. All righty, I'm going to let you go. So thanks for coming on and sitting in on the fifth anniversary show and giving some of your stories about what it was like to launch the service. You've been here for 5 years. You launched the service. You and your team launched this service. I think
seem like it's been that long.
Not only have you launched the service, but you've also had how many upgrades? How many revisions, updates? 10?
Six of the core service, I think, plus numerous upgrades to Xbox.com and
all this other
Zune and
all the e stuff.
Yeah,
Zune's out this week, by the way.
Zune's out on Tuesday. Yeah, we're almost there. I'm looking forward to that.
Zune now has podcasting support. And I will have a special URL up on Tuesday, which will have just for Zune people.
Podcasting support, which you can wirelessly sync to your Zune, which can then be plugged into your Xbox 360 to listen to. See how I tied that all together?
Oh, that's interesting. I never thought about that.
That's my dock is plugged into my 360, so that way I can use it to grab music.
Now I have mine in my car, so when I pull in the house, it just syncs upstairs.
And, wireless sync is
wireless sync's kind of cool.
People are going to love that.
So that'll be out in the stores on Tuesday, and that's the way it goes. I'm going to wrap it up now, E.
Happy anniversary, everyone.
Happy anniversary. Enjoy the shows this week, and we'll talk to you maybe next week.
Maybe.
Maybe?
Maybe.
All right. Later. Okay, so we're hitting record. We're
Seriously?
I couldn't find the show. I had all these WAV files. It's just numbers then.
So we should tell people what we're talking about.
This is after show.
So we're in the after show. We were talking about why there wasn't an after show last week.
Right.
Which you post it, and then I go read the comments, and people are like, yeah, why is there no after show? What's going on, guys? And I'm like, no, we did an after show. Yeah, why is there no
after show? We could have, but I don't remember. I really don't remember. But this is the after show for this week.
This is not last week's after show. This is this week's after show.
Or you can do it as last week's, whatever you want. But you're getting a lot of... Actually, the other thing is I didn't feel too bad about it because we have so much show. We have this huge show that we just ran.
Well, all the Mass Effect interviews.
All the Mass Effects. This huge show that we just ran for the past however long. And then, of course, the next four special interviews coming up this week.
Yep. And, I just... Complete brain vapor lock. Where was I going?
I have no idea.
It's only going to be timely for like people who catch this early,
right?
And people who catch this in Seattle.
Okay.
But Monday night, the 12th, is that November 12th?
Yep.
At Pacific Place,
mm-hmm.
The special screening of Battlestar Galactica Razor, mm-hmm. which is co-sponsored by Mass Effect and Microsoft. And
I'm going down to co-host.
I don't know who else. Yes.
So the funny story is, I'm going down to co-host. And they gave me first of all, tickets are sold out.
Oh, and they've been sold out.
So I don't know why you're even mentioning this, because you're going to piss people off.
No, because the people who already have tickets, some of them might be listening.
All right.
And they'll find it interesting that you're
going to
be there.
Okay, so we're going down because they asked me if I would go down and host and just get up and say hello. And I said, absolutely, I'd love to do it. And I said, can I get a couple tickets to give away? They said no, because they're sold out.
Right.
So they said, I can give you one ticket for your wife. Of course, my wife doesn't want to go, so I'm bringing E.
I can totally see your wife not being interested.
Yeah, she's like, what? What?
No, my girlfriend would be the same way. She doesn't like Battlestar Galactica.
Right.
She wouldn't want to go either.
So it'll be you and me and 500 Battlestar Galactica geeks at Pacific Place.
And I'm glad you're going to host it, because no offense to the guys who work there, but you know how there's this new trend in theaters where like the assistant manager or some random guy comes in and like talks to you before the big thing?
Yeah, why do they do that?
I don't know, but I hate that. It just, as someone who goes and sees a lot of movies, I don't enjoy that. You're Major Nelson. That'll be interesting.
We'll have fun up there. Hopefully they'll have a microphone for me.
We need to like bring swag and do trivia contests.
Yeah, I'll bring some stuff down. We got some
t-shirts.
I got some 12-month live subscription cards.
That'll work. You know what I have sitting in my closet?
What?
I have a whole... Remember the old iPhone someone at Xbox t-shirts?
Yeah.
I should bring some of those.
Yeah, we got...
I've been giving those away for years.
Well, you know what? I'm actually over here in my closet. I have a closet in my office.
You have a big office.
And
look
at this shirt that I got. From Mass Effect. Isn't that cool?
What is that logo on it?
That's the logo that's on the characters in the game.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
So, I don't know.
Cool.
I'll wear that next week for...
It's Mass Effect theme. You should wear
I'll
it
wear that
the
for
event,
the screening. So.
Since they're sponsoring it.
So, that'll be Monday night.
Yeah, that's
and if
cool.
And I'm sorry if you're listening to this. If the majority, 99.9% of the people that are listening to that either after Monday or aren't in Seattle and don't have tickets,
right.
Sorry.
I couldn't get tickets. I tried because they announced it, and it was go to this website and fill out this form and first come, first serve.
I took care of it.
And myself and all my friends got locked out, but I know you. So.
All right, so I want to wrap it up now, but I want to say thank you to – let me pull his name out here. Rich Bunnell of Connecticut. Rich, I want to thank you. Rich rise to the challenge. He went to Vinyl Tech in Middletown and got a Vinyl Tech t-shirt, which we're going to give to KP.
Now, we have to post a picture of KP wearing the shirt.
Right.
That we owe Rich that much.
Right. Yeah. So, Rich, I want to thank you for that. Your Vinyl Tech is a school that that KP wasn't admitted into, so he's really bummed about it. So, anyway, so he's now has a shirt.
So, I've got one other thing before we wrap it up. So, Facebook. You and I have been talking about Facebook for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And a lot of listeners have been finding us and, mm-hmm. you know, adding us to their friends list and saying hi. And very cool. To the couple of you who thought it would be cool to, like, you know, use Facebook to track down my girlfriend and send her, you know, weird, creepy messages. Yeah. Stop.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know why people do that. But.
Well, that's because I need to figure out, and I posted this last week, how do you mass add people? Like, add all?
I don't think you can.
I don't think you can either.
Yeah.
Somebody sent me a URL that's like, go to, like, facebook.com/ads or something, and I didn't see anything, so I don't know what's going on
there. Their new social ads thing?
Yeah.
We should talk about that next week, but there's a ton of that in the news.
People yeah, we'll talk all about over that. Thing,
so. We'll talk about it next week. We're going to wrap it up now because I got to get cutting these interviews up. You got five. I got four more interviews I got to get ready for the rest of the week.
And yeah, and one of them is calling you and going, "What's going on?"
So. All right, I'll talk to you guys later.
Bye, everybody.